The world's not going to miss a bunch of assholes in Ed Hardy t-shirts.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 8 for the week of October 14th, 2013. I am modern-day Minotaur David T. Cole, and I'm here with bus flipper Sarah D. Bunting.
I just got the tweet.
Human voodoo doll Tara Ariano.
Ow, I mean for you.
And mute butler David Bunting. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joe is unable to join us this week. Hope to have him back next week.
Nope, week after.
Week after.
He's been called to Mount Weather.
All right. But we have Dave Bunting. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. before we get into it, we just wanted to ask everybody who listens for a small favor. Each week, it seems we get a few people that didn't know the podcast was back, even though we've been doing it about a couple months now.
Uh-huh.
So if you're on social media, if you wouldn't mind maybe just posting something in the week or weeks ahead that people should be listening to this podcast if they've enjoyed it in the past or like podcasts that are a lot like what we do, right? Makes sense. Slap it on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and we would thank you, because there's people out there we used to have in the first run that are unaware that, we're back, and that makes us sad. All right, so let's get to it, shall we?
Speaking of haunted chickens, I don't even know. Speaking of things that are back, American Horror Story Coven. Is back. I can't pronounce it Coven
no,
anymore.
Dave, thanks Dave to has American been saying movie. It that way.
It just sounds like oven.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to say
we're referring
Coven.
To, of course, American movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And the famous. The guy just refused to believe it was pronounced Coven.
Yeah. One of the stars is like, no, seriously. Like, had the dictionary. He's like, I like to say Coven.
In my head, that guy who corrects him, like the town thespian. Is Brian Cox. I think you reminded me of him, and I cannot, in my mind, it's actually Brian Cox doing like a really like undercover role. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Mark Borchardt.
Yeah.
Unless you're still alive, if you can call that living.
Oh, jeez.
American Horror Story.
So Dave Cole, why don't you start us off? Because I believe this was your first experience with American Horror Story.
That is true. I'm not a big horror fan. It's not like I'm scared of being scared, but I just don't find being scared entertaining.
It's true. I tried this whole weekend to get Dave to watch The Purge because it's now available on demand, and he wouldn't.
I enjoyed The Purge on a conceptual level, but I know if I watch it, I won't care. So I just kind of want to leave it where it is.
Without the prequel, the binge, it's really not good.
So this was my first exposure to the American Horror Story universe. And I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that we have actors in all three series, but they don't play the same characters.
Yes. Or in two. So, like, Thaisa Farmiga has been in two out of three.
Right. But we have repeat
actors. And it looks like
actors.
Lily Ray. Yeah, it's like the Ryan Murphy repertory company.
Yes.
And each one has its own little kind of place in the beast horror menagerie, right? Like,
yes.
last one was aliens and crazy people, and this one's witches.
Yep.
I don't know. I kind of was entertained, sort of, but kind of wished that it was a little snappier than the first episode. I've also watched the second episode, but I won't talk about that.
It airs
in a couple days. But I found it intriguing. Mm-hmm. I understand that people are not as happy with this third one as they are so far with past efforts. Mm. No?
That might just be me. Oh. It got the highest ratings of the series to date.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know you hate witches.
Well, but the witch part is what everybody who loves it seems to be responding to. And when they find out that Misty Day's theme song is all Fleetwood Mac, they're going to love it even more. Because that's one of the revelations.
Wow.
Not really a spoiler from episode two. But yeah, people were going crazy for it.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm the outlier. Because I watched the pilot of the first season, the series premiere. And then
you gave up.
I almost didn't make it to the end, but my at the time boss, Mark Lazanti, ordered me to watch the whole thing, so I did. But then I bailed out after that, and then I got back in season two because God knows I love a unethical, crazy house where weird medical experiments are happening. That's my jam. Yeah. So I loved season two, and this one has not grabbed me so far.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it. I am intrigued. I kind of enjoy that whoever is the, whatever you call it, director of photography or cinematography or whatever, really like has so many toys at his disposal and he's using them all. Like he's got tilt shift lens going. He's got like Dutch angles up the wazoo. He's got like extreme fisheye lenses going. They're using cranes inside of houses, you know, for certain shots on staircases
there
and stuff like
really
that.
There was a really neat shot of Jessica Lange just under the umbrella and all you see is this the black circle, which
yeah,
I thought
was really cool.
So that part of it is kind of fun.
It's a good looking show. The production values are
It is
high. I mean, it's, you know, it's fun to watch. I mean, I only watched the first season. I did not watch season two. My wife Sam did, but I think she dropped off like around halfway through. I think there was maybe some infanticide that she couldn't handle that she just bailed on.
Right. There's always something that is going to trigger someone. I mean, what I sort of like about this show and sort of Ryan Murphy in general is that the pace usually is so fast that like, even if whatever it is completely outre or offensive or just kind of not working out the way they thought it would, they just keep slinging stuff at the wall and something is going to stick. It has this like insane energy to it. That seemed a little muted this time out. It seemed like maybe there were some network notes about establishing the setting and stuff like that. And I am concerned about this one just because, generally speaking, New Orleans in the culture, I feel, is a little bit damp, and I'm kind of over it. And it's like, voodoo share, like, fuck off. Like, we get it. There's frog legs. Okay. Have something else to say. And, it, like, Top Chef is in New Orleans this season, and there's something about New Orleans and the culture. Having never been to New Orleans, the city, at all, I just think there are these shorthands in the culture that always annoy me.
And isn't True Blood New Orleans based?
It's in probably Louisiana.
Okay, well, that's pretty close.
It's close enough. I mean, there's True Blood also has its, I mean, I fell off that show long time ago, but I remember there being a fair amount of voodoo tropes and the like.
Yeah, I mean, I like the repertory players. I was concerned that Lily Rabe's character, she played, I forget her nun name from last year, but she's always really good and sort of thoughtful and isn't, you know, there's something to be said for playing to the cheap seats, which Dylan McDermott and Jessica Lange, in my opinion, both do. I don't think that's bad. I think it suits the material.
Yeah.
Lily Rabe is a little more subtle and I enjoy her contributions, but it did seem a little slow. I mean, I've always liked the show, even when it's doing something completely stupid, but it was a little more stately than past premieres.
Yeah, part of what I enjoyed about it, at least in the first season, was that it was kind of campy and seemed to know it about itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I would agree with that. And I like that Sarah Paulson is back. I enjoyed her very much in season two, and she plays a really different character this time. But, I also like that they got to a lot of the exposition that in other shows I think would take a longer time to get out. Like, immediately Jessica Lange's character knows that Zoe, the Thaisa Farmiga character, and Madison, Emma Roberts, have fucked up the frat boy party bus. Like, that doesn't take a long time to tease out of anybody. And, you know, so it lets them get right to it, which is good.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm a little concerned about their internal logic as far as the witchcraft. Like, they have these powers, but then why would they kind of submit to, like, the rules at Miss Robichaud's academy? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they have these powers, but then they're sort of farmed out there by their parents. And in Zoe's case, her power is, like mental vagina dentata.
Sure.
But she sleeps with these guys and then their brains liquefy, I guess, is the thing.
She's like that character from X-Men who can't touch anybody.
Yeah, Rogue.
Well, she is. I mean, that's basically, it's the same character.
Speaking of True Blood.
And actually, it kind of reminds me of Heroes, right? Where every witch has, like, a singular unique power, but doesn't really have, like, they're not, I mean, they're all superheroes, but you know what I mean? Like, they're not, like, Superman's got the flight, and he's got the laser vision and all this sort of stuff, but but the hero's like, well, this guy can open people's heads, and this guy, you know, can materialize through walls and stuff like that.
And it's also like X-Men in the sense of, like, the dynamic seems to be between, you know, do you assimilate into mainstream society, or do you rebel and cause a revolution? And that's obviously the two poles that are represented by the Cordelia, the Sarah Paulson character, and Fiona Jessica Lange,
who is her mom and is the Supreme. But my question is sort of about, like, Madison, for example. She doesn't seem to have any issue with her powers, and I think, you know, she submitted to going to this school because it was like a PR issue.
Yeah.
She dropped a heavy light on her director's head and killed him. But I'm also kind of not clear on why the others are there, or what, you know, Zoe wants, I think, to control or get rid of or contain this power, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in the case of the others who don't seem that bummed out by their powers, it's kind of unclear as to, like, how is that going to work within the confines of the school? Like, why would they obey Cordelia? Or am I making any sense?
Yes. It is a problem.
Why? Well, that's the function of Jessica Lange's character, obviously, is to bring them bring them out and, you know, be, you know, one's id, one's ego, and, you know, and the witches and two sides, and, you know, and eventually Magneto and Professor X are going to fight. But, you know, even if it's a little bit slow compared to previous seasons, which it sounds like it is, like, to open up.
Yeah.
And the second episode, a couple things happen, but it's, I wouldn't say, like, it's a big, you know, they didn't jump in and get super crazy or anything like that. There's some stuff that happens. But I'm kind of glad that, like, this show is out there, just because, you know, it's the further, like, I think it's mainstream, but it still pushes the envelope a bit on batshit, which I love.
Yes.
Like, when a series gets batshit, like The Bridge, the Danish Bridge, or Luther and stuff like that, like, that's totally where I want a show to be a lot of the time.
Scandal is like that too.
Yeah, it is. And that this show, even if you're not into, like, the supernatural part of it, you know, it's good that it's out there, because that means if it's a success, then the next person's going to be able to do, you know, like, you know, something crazy like Law and Order with robots, or I guess they already did that, Century City.
But in it's cool that it's contained too. Like, each season has its venue. I like that there's, like, a, you know, company of players. That's kind of cool. It totally turned me around on Sarah Paulson, who I hated prior to her being on this show, and she was brilliant in it last year. And I mean, I like that it's this sort of almost old time, like, serial program, but then once that scene, or once that setting is done with, it's done with, and he moves on to the next thing, and it doesn't have time to get all labored. Like, we've discussed in the past, in passing, why it gets nominated as a miniseries. Like, that's sort of annoying to me. It should just be in with drama in Emmy and Golden Globe consideration. But on the other hand, it is unique in that it's the same people and it's the same show, but it's a different situation and different casting every time, which I think is cool. I think it's a innovative way to look at storytelling. So
it's also cool just from, like, a production standpoint, in that, you know, you can still have the same sort of overall players involved in the production, but you kind of get, like, a built-in reset button, so everyone can just try something totally new the next season, even if what happened previously didn't really work.
Right.
You know, they get to just try something, like, totally, you know, maybe equally outlandish, but at least, you know, a different setting or a different, you know, story. I think it's pretty cool.
It also got around what my problem with it was conceptually with the first season, which is, you know, the reason a horror movie works is because there's a climax and a catharsis and a denouement, and, like, on TV, that's sort of anathema to how TV works, where it's, you know, you have to keep spinning out the thread. But if you know every season is self-contained, that kind of solves that problem.
Yeah, it's interesting that they were able to sort of, you know, by resetting every year, sort of, like, do the impossible, where they're mixing the American system with the British system.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're getting a long running series potentially, but you're resetting it, like, as if it was a, you know, a short run. Like, how many episodes is a season?
12 or 13.
Yeah,
I can't
so
remember.
It's pretty short. You know, it's not like a 22 order. So yeah, I like that part of it too. But yeah, I'll keep watching. I'm intrigued, and
I'm really surprised.
And Yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes. It's weird, you know. I like weird stuff, and
yeah,
and maybe it sounds like I should maybe check out the second season because there's like Asylum and aliens and stuff. And
yeah, the second season is really bonkers.
Ancient aliens.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, I mean, it takes place in the 60s, so ancient-ish. The other thing I'll say since it premiered last night is I definitely, in terms of like horror portrayals on TV, prefer this model to the model of The Walking Dead, where that's, I mean, I know it's based on a book and whatever, but that, it's so boring. I was Dave put it on the premiere last night to watch the first bit of it, and it was so boring. I read a book. Nobody seems to be shocked by that.
I'm not shocked. I tried Walking Dead, and I watched like maybe, I think I fell asleep during the pilot episode.
Yeah,
it's I watched most of the first season. From how people actually talk to each other. That, yeah. You know, in the pilot, it took him like 47 minutes to ask what was going on with the fucking zombies walking around.
Yeah.
Not to mention, how long was I asleep? Why am I awake now? Why didn't someone snack on me? You know what? I'm not even going to start. It's not for me.
I mean, at this, what is this, season four, right?
Yeah.
Like, at this point, why hasn't everyone just given up? I know I keep saying this every time there's any kind of apocalyptic situation, but like, what are you living for?
There actually was a storyline this week with a lady in the woods who gave up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was her name Tara?
No. She had like a, she sounded
it was
like
Chiara, though, wasn't it? It was pretty close.
But yeah, it's weird because it's sort of like it has zombies, but it's starting to feel like it could just be a survivalist show.
Right.
And the zombies just could be like, you know, Russians like from Red Dawn or something like that. Because they're not really, besides the occasional person Wolverines. Getting bit and turning.
Yeah.
It's more about, you know, how these people are coping and, you know, finding shelter and building defenses and, you know, working with each other or not.
So it's the logical progression of Doomsday Preppers is what you're saying.
It sort of is, actually. It has, I think it has more to do with that these days than it does with, say, you know, Dawn of the Dead or something right. like that. Like, it's become more about the group than about, you know, the zombies, which you kind of have to do. Otherwise, you're just making, you know, action videos week after week. Mm-hmm. But it's like this one, like the, there was two set pieces in the premiere. Not really set, but the first noticeable thing was that all the zombies are coming to their fortress fences, and mm-hmm. every day they have to assign people like with sort of like
with pokey things.
Yeah, like
I
you
saw
know,
that part.
Like they're you picking up garbage in the park.
I was just going to say a trash picker.
Yeah, they have to like basically you know put them through their heads at the fence, and there's like big piles of bodies. And the other one was a pretty good scene actually, where they go to a Big Lots, which is an interesting. A piece of product placement, Big Lots store, mm-hmm. where they're just going to get supplies, but they didn't realize there's all these zombies on the roof, and they kind of go to a weak spot in the roof, and then just kind of like start falling through the ceiling, into where into the, you know, the electronics good department. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty good, pretty good. It has its moments. It's sort of like a show that would benefit from the NFL Red Zone treatment. Where it just lets you know when there's a good nice. Action set piece going on, and you can tune into it and tune out.
Yeah.
But maybe what could work for The Walking Dead is like, because after we saw World War Z, you described to me because you read the book, that every chapter is sort of like a different view of the zombification of the world.
Yeah.
Like if it had been a serialized version of World War Z, that might be more interesting.
Potentially. If World War Z wasn't a movie and they made it into an HBO series,
that's
it would have kicked
a
lot of ass.
That's what I mean.
Because World War Z, the book, I found it was entertaining up to about halfway. Like the actual, you know, if you plotted the zombie uprise and sort of, you know, defeat, the top of the curve is actually halfway through the book.
Right.
The second half isn't quite as interesting. But if they turned that into a series, you know, they would have limitless potential to tell other stories,
right.
and they could like even bounce around through time, and that would be fine. Like you know, the arc of the
That's what American Horror Story does. In terms of each season, it's set in a different era.
No. What I mean is if the whole story takes place over 5 years,
I see.
Episode one could be day one.
Right.
Episode four could have been, you know, day 2000 or whatever. You know, like it, because they're just like vignettes.
Yeah,
and a lot of them are really entertaining. Like there's one about, I think, a Chinese sub and they find out that zombies can just like are crossing the ocean on the ocean floor, walking across the ocean floor, and they can hear them tapping on the hull as the
submarine. Oh, that just gave me an actual shiver.
Yeah, there's lots of really good moments in the book.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the movie
just focused on one story.
Yeah, there was a UN guy or something like that in the book, but it didn't follow one guy through. And I felt like that should have been just something else. That should have just been, you know, UN zombie or whatever. Or, oh, actually, UN dead. That's what they should have called that.
anyway.
But if HBO or, say, you know, even FX or somebody got a hold of that, that could have been a really good series. I feel like that was a big miss.
Still could happen.
Yeah, I suppose it could.
Anyway, sorry for that tangent.
Or a miniseries that would be in the vein of The World Without Us. Did anyone else see that?
Oh, yeah.
It was on the History Channel, and it still creeps me out. They re-air it every now and then, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, I can't watch
all the high-rises with the raccoons living in it, and it's like 50 years after people, like,
ugh. Sorry for that tangent. I'll just say, I'll point out what one of our commenters did, which is, this is how I'll tie this segment into a bow. If you're in New Orleans, there's definitely voodoo, and that means there's going to be zombies eventually. So that's how that all tied in.
Yeah,
sorry.
Totally. All right.
Moving Fair on. Enough.
Hey, it's horror week. It's fine. And going from things that probably won't be canceled anytime soon to an update on our cancellation pool. We've had some victims already this year. Joe, who's absent today, is, I believe, leading 2 out of 3.
He sure is.
Of his shows have been canceled. He selected Back in the Game, which I guess is still on.
Yes.
Lucky 7, which is Tits Up. We
First
Are Men.
First cancellation Ditto. Of the season, and We Are Men, second cancellation of the season. So 2 for 3 for Mr. Joe Reed. Unfortunately for you and me, Sarah, we both picked Dads, which I read this weekend has just had 6 more scripts ordered by Fox. So I guess that's not going anywhere.
Why?
But betrayal, is that even a thing? Like, has anyone actually laid an eyeball on this actual show? I've never heard anyone talk about it or watch it or know what it is or not think it was a parody of itself.
Mm-hmm.
How about you do me a solid and cancel it so I can have a shot at winning this pool?
Well, hey, it's clearly going to be this year's 666 Park Avenue. It's like no one is talking about it. And Revenge is not even really a good lead-in anymore. So I don't know what they're doing, but I don't know.
And I'm a little surprised that Sean Saves the World didn't perform for you, frankly. Because that was, I think, the worst reviewed. I mean, with the sort of caveat that a lot of people were like, we're not even going to bother shitting on We Are Men and Dads because doy, that seemed to be the most extensively shat upon sitcom of the new season, at least among the critics I read.
For me is that I picked a show that's on NBC where the ratings are so low across the board that it really...
Yeah. What else are they going to put on?
Exactly. They can have something hang on for so much longer because, you know, relatively speaking, it's probably doing fine-ish, but people also hate Welcome to the Family. So at this point, it's kind of a toss-up which one of those two is going to be the first to go. I don't know what they're thinking leading off this, putting an entire night of new shows practically on. You know, it's like 3 brand new sitcoms that have no name recognition and Parks and Recreation leading the night in yet another new time slot, making it harder for people to even find it. And also their whole thing is like, it's NBC's new family of comedy led by Parks and Recreation about no families. So in conclusion, NBC doesn't know what it's doing. Therefore, Sean Saves the World might very well have a whole season for all I know.
Is Back in the Game doing well? Because I feel like I'm looking at this list and it's going to be a 3-way tie until June.
I think Back in the Game is doing okay. I haven't heard anything that it's even on the bubble, but it's hammocked between 2 pretty popular shows, The Middle and Modern Family, both of which are strong for ABC. Okay. So it might be a time slot hit. So we'll see.
By the way, I figured out what the prize for this is going to be.
Oh.
But I'll let you know during game time, okay?
Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
God damn it, Jazz.
That's your jazz.
Gets worse every time.
Is this worse than jazz?
Na 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 na
Is the Mindy Project theme worse than jazz? I open it up to the floor.
Oh,
it's bad.
I despise that theme. Hate it.
I despise it.
It just seems like it's a Arsenio act break. It's dated. It doesn't go with the material. I don't know who she owed a favor, was trying to get work for. Like, why can't it just have a title card?
Yeah.
It's, anyway.
It's so annoying.
At least it's not, like, stretched out to a full minute or anything. I mean, at least it's only 15 seconds, but boy.
It's a long 15, bro.
It's bad.
As a concentrate, it is definitely worse than jazz, but it does have the saving grace of only being a book 18 seconds long.
But I feel like it may have been jazz, and they just excised 15 seconds and slapped it on. I'm going to say it is as bad as jazz.
It's as bad as jazz. It's as bad. I'm with Sarah on that.
Here's the other thing. I watched that show, so I'm stuck with it. I can avoid jazz. This.
Yeah. Ugh. And it's too short.
As bad.
The other problem is it's too short even to make it worthwhile to fast forward it. So you know you just have to hear it every week. I'm going to say that's worse than jazz.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, it's pretty. I'm going to have to say it's probably as bad as jazz with the, you know, one is short and terrible and one is long and terrible. Mindy Project, if that was played on the loop, you know, if you had to listen to that for like 10 minutes.
Oh, you would go mad.
You would go mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be like the next chapter of American Horror Story.
Yeah. It wouldn't take 10 minutes. Right. Taking the under.
All right. Good to know, guys. Good to know. All right. That means it is time for the canon. And Dave Bunting went above and beyond the Call of Duty this week and actually compiled his own pre-recorded as if he was
some kind of professional.
Professional and, user submission. So here we go. Dave Bunting on tape. Take it away.
My submission to the canon is Final Grades, the finale of The Wire's fourth season. It would be pretty easy to go on for hours and hours about any episode of The Wire because it's so many shows at once, but Final Grades is truly representative of what made The Wire such a thoroughly great show. Now, The Wire was never afraid to show its characters multitudes, and that's, you know, for good or bad. And this episode's a pretty perfect example of that. From Tommy Carsetti slipping down the political rabbit hole, you know, sort of eyeing the governorship mere months after his mayoral primary victory, to Jay Landsman showing a rare display of compassion for poor Bubbles.
Let's throw this one back. Sad-ass motherfucker's carrying more weight than we'll ever put on him.
What about the clearance?
Fuck the clearance.
We've got Weebay, a murderer but not a fool, recognizing the good in Bunny Colvin, taking in his son Naaman, and also planting a boot in Delanda's ass while he's at it.
Man come down here to say my son could be anything he damn please.
Except a soldier.
Yeah, well, look at me up in here. Who the fuck would want to be that if they could be anything else, Delanda? But you gonna let go of that boy. Bet that.
And Bodie, fed up with Marlowe's murdering, confides in McNulty at the Arboretum.
This game is rigged, man. You're like them little bitches on the chessboard.
Pawns.
Yo, I'm not snitching on none of my boys. But Marlowe, this nigga and his kind, man, they gotta fall. They gotta.
Well, for that to happen, somebody's gotta step up.
I do what I gotta. I don't give a fuck. Just don't ask me to live on my fucking knees, you know?
You're a soldier, Bodie.
Hell yeah.
As Omar says earlier in the season,
a man got to have a code.
And like I said earlier, I could go on and on. I could go on and on just about the corner kids. Like how Michael's now being groomed to be the next Marlowe after trying so hard for so long to not even get involved in the game. How Randy's suffering for being a quote-unquote snitch has no end in sight despite Sergeant Carver's best efforts. How Duquan's circumstances are just pretty much too heartbreaking to fathom. And, you know, how Naaman is probably the one among them who deserves Bunny's fatherly warmth the least. But The Wire isn't really about deserve. These kids may as well be the trapped animals referenced in the pull quote at the beginning of the episode. In fact, most of the characters could be viewed that way, trapped by circumstance, bureaucracy, business as usual, or just an inability to go with the changing tide. What makes this episode in particular canon-worthy is the deftness with which it weaves between its multiple storylines without giving any of them short shrift. The amount of ground it covers is pretty staggering, but it never feels like it's racing towards a finish line or trying to check off boxes before the season ends. In fact, the pacing's pretty excellent. The show allows some scenes and characters room to breathe and share a moment. You know, whether it's Bodhi and McNulty at the Arboretum, or, you know, Michael's quiet flashback to helping his brother Bug with homework before he got involved in the game, McNulty and Beattie in bed together, sharing sort of a quiet moment, or even this little gem between Bunk and Snoop.
Thank you all that for hassling niggas and shit.
I know I'm all that. I'm thinking about some pussy.
Yeah, me too.
I could list all the things that happened in this episode, but that would be kind of beside the point. I mean, every episode of The Wire has a lot of things going on. Final Grades does something unique, and then it demonstrates the interconnected nature of our lives and our institutions and shows us why we need to give a shit when those institutions fail us. There's obviously plenty more to discuss, but that's sort of just a starter. So I officially nominate Final Grades for the Extra Hot Great Canon.
I think this is an excellent nomination. I have in my notes, it's like getting beaten up by Michelangelo. That's kind of what watching some of these, especially season four episodes, is like, at least to me. I had not watched season four since the first time I watched it because it a lot of it is just too tough to take, especially Duquan, who I had completely forgotten about. And I think it was like a defense mechanism on the part of my brain because it's just heartbreaking. Like his old man coat and little backpack, and he's all woolly and out of sorts, that poor kid. And then just Randy getting beaten down at the end there. And I realized first of all how much I miss some of these actors. Like, just there's so much charisma on screen at any given time. And I think the actor who plays Michael wound up on the 90210 reboot.
He did, that's right.
Tristan Wilde.
It was like, you know what, do what you gotta do, but oof, like he's whatever, some lacrosse playing East Coast transplant on 90210. I was like, okay.
There's a couple indeed. Couple on Walking Dead this year.
Not from this season.
But. No, but... Well, no.
Yeah, the D'Angelo boxer. Showed up last night, right?
Yeah, D'Angelo's there.
Oh, yeah,
there
and Cuddy.
And Cuddy.
Yeah.
Or on the show.
Oh, nice. Cuddy. Awesome.
I loved Cuddy.
That was actually the one scene in this episode that I didn't remember it, and I didn't like it. That nurse being like, you gangsters are all the same. You expect us to patch you up, da-da-da, nothing ever changes. And it was like a weird misstep on the part of the writing, like telling instead of showing. But other than that, I mean, it's a brilliant episode. It has all the, you know, characters that you love. It has all the contrast between institutions and people. I hate watching that Bodhi shootout because you know what's coming. Yeah. But on the other hand, I think he went out in the Bodhiest possible way. And I just want to note also that the casting of all of the kids, the like street kids, mm-hmm. was brilliant because they were right at that point where puberty was like in progress or sort of finishing up, and the contrast between how they look at the end of the season versus at the beginning when they're still more children is just really striking, especially in the fact that Nay has gotten like heavier and taller and more resembles Bunny Colvin when they're standing there together in the prison waiting room. And it's just an amazing accomplishment in terms of every cylinder of a TV show, every aspect of it firing.
Yeah.
It's great.
Sarah, to rewind a bit, can you explain what you meant at the very beginning when you said it's like getting beaten by Michelangelo? Because I did not grok that.
It's just very difficult to watch, and I felt wrung out, but it's great art. So it's being beaten, you know, with a Michelangelo or someone, you know.
All right. You know you got to dumb it down for me, Sarah.
The face and head with the Mona Lisa.
It's, Dave, you know. Did you think she meant Michelangelo, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
No, I thought it was Mac Angelo.
Mac Angelo?
Call back.
You mean
Mac?
Man?
You mean
McDonald?
Man Angelo?
No, McAngelo Barksdale.
McDonald Barksdale, you mean?
Yeah. They're, fuck. I'm never gonna,
this is why people aren't tweeting the podcast is back. It's back, but it's really stupid, people are saying to themselves.
Sometimes dead is better.
There are two shows where I am super happy just to listen to people talk and not move, even, you know, just sitting at a table. And one is Deadwood and the other one is The Wire. And, you know, this show could have absolutely no action in it, you know, and it would be just as compelling. Like, and I think for me, each season up to the fourth got better than the last. Like, the first was great, second was better, third was better, and this one was sort of like, you know, the height of The Wire. I think
we didn't have to talk about season five.
And yes, it never happened. Mm-hmm. There never was no monorail season five. And there never was.
Serial killer Landry. Poochie went back to his home planet.
And as the finale to the, you know, what I think is the best season of The Wire, I mean, it really, all the characters really come out. The moments between, like, the two cops at the start, you know, when they got Bubbles in the... in the interrogation room, and I forgot the big cop's name, but
Landsman.
Yeah,
Landsman.
He kind of gives him a pass, and he's sort of like going over it with the partner and stuff like that. Like, those moments are great, and you know, and if you, I mean, not the same show, but you contrast a moment like that with the same sort of moment in like Law and Order or something like that, and you know, you see why The Wire is way up when, you know, the rest of it's down there.
It's really not fair to compare them.
No, but I mean,
but I know what you mean.
But you know, in the way they take their time with it,
In
the way that it's not the perp, it's a character in there, you know, even if, I mean, Bubbles was a recurring character, but even if it was somebody else in there, they'd take their time with it.
Right.
And I like that about the show a lot.
Yeah, the season three is my favorite, but I recognize that season four is better. And I feel like the reason is, you know, something that Dave touched on in his excellent recording of the submission
with background music.
With background music, so professional. I feel like the other seasons, season one touched on it a little bit. The, you know, showing us Wallace and the kids that were sort of the corner kids then, and then sort of dropped that and picked it back up in season four to remind us, like, some people choose this life and some people have it thrust upon them. And I feel like that's sort of what season three was about. These four kids in particular. Trying to not end up the way we kind of dread that they will. Randy, especially, I'm always happy to see Maestro Harrell or Harrell on Suburgatory, because it's like, I just pretend Randy got a better life, moved to Connecticut, and everything worked out for him in the end, or Westchester, or wherever they're supposed to be. But but yeah, this episode is great, and it's almost the silent moments, like you said, that are the best. When Steve Earle's guy Wendell, when he goes to find Bubbles in the hospital. And Bubbles is asleep in the chair and then wakes up and sees him and, like, can't, you know, you don't need to hear it to know what's happening. Like, both of those actors, not that Steve Earle is an actor really, but both of those performances, so strong. And to see McNulty kind of slowly come back around to the idea that, like, he doesn't have to be a beat cop. He can be a detective again and he'll be okay. It's set off by the very funny scene with Bunk and Lester in the gym, basically taunting him into coming back and being a detective again.
Yeah. And Freeman being good police.
Oh, I fucking love Lester.
Yeah.
God, it's always so satisfying to watch him just sort of piece things together. And I think one of the other things about this episode that I didn't touch on in the intro, that's like one of my favorite things about it. And it's the same thing that sort of makes the season finale of season three of Mad Men really exciting, is the whole sort of like assembly of the team.
Yeah.
Freeman's 11. You know? Totally.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the major crimes unit's been sort of, if not castrated, it at least had its tubes tied for most of season four. And, you know, just to sort of see, you know, all the events sort of conspiring, you know, now that Daniels is a colonel, right? Now that he's a colonel and he actually has like a lot more pull. You know, he's able to sort of oversee major crimes again, to get rid of that total asshole who pretty much was responsible for castrating it in the first place.
Yeah.
And there's that great scene where he's saying, without saying it, like, I can fix this problem for you if you give me back the major crimes unit. But he doesn't. He just, you know, Daniels is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With his giant eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also kind of like how, you know, this episode puts a pretty fine point on, you know, at the beginning of the series, Herc and Carver are very much two heads in the same monster. And it's really interesting to see a demonstration of how far apart from one another they've drifted, especially just sort of seeing Carver deal with, you know, the foster system throughout most of the episode and just coming up against every possible wall, and then seeing Herc basically, you know, getting the boot for all of his shenanigans all season.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and for and Herc just fucked over so many people.
Yeah.
You know, throughout the season, Bubbles included.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere, I think it was Difficult Men by Brett Martin, which I'd finished the other day, that they originally wanted to have Carver be the step into the teacher role instead of Presbo.
Oh.
And I really love that actor, but I think they completely made the right decision.
Totally. Oh,
just because Presbo is like the definition of overwhelm at all times, except when he's like, you know, in like inside being a house cat and figuring out mathy wire things.
Yeah.
And that he would be thrown into this situation and clearly was, you know, a stiff breeze away from throwing up for like 9 of the 12 or 13 episodes. And,
yeah.
I mean, but then to see Carver, who's, I think, more of a hard ass and more adept at life, at like the social game of being a policeman.
Yeah.
Just at sea with this situation, that it's like, it's one kid, why can't we do this? And then he's getting screamed at, P.S., by the real life actual Jay Landsman as his lieutenant.
Oh, that's right.
Complete with Balmer that's accent. Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's also a great Omar moment in this episode, you know, where you get to see him and Prop Joe and Prop Joe's muscle all in a room together where they're negotiating, you know, a buyback of the heroin that Omar lifted.
And, 20 on the dollar.
20, and the gravitas in
30
that,
on the dollar if you hear Prop Joe tell it later.
In that series, in that scene is amazing. And the other thing I just want to give props for, and I don't think you hear it a lot, is the guy who plays Marlo is so cold and soulless in just the perfect way. Like, that character scares me on a genuine level, like just how, like, you know, stone-faced he can be doing everything. And it's not underacting, it's nailing it. And I think that, you know, when you have flashier characters like Omar, you know, you tend to sort of push that aside, but he's really good.
Yeah, Omar
is
great.
That's a good note, because there's no reasoning with Marlo, like, at least with Avon and whatever. We can get into what I think of that actor. The short version is not much. I think he was directed weirdly. But even with Stringer, that was someone that, like, you could reason with him. There was some humanity in there. Marlo was just this, like, power collecting machine and doesn't give a shit. So.
Well, this is the point that Bunny tries to make to Weebay in prison, where it's like, it's not, there's no code anymore. They're not the corners that we knew on either side. You know, he's just like, and that's Bodhi's point too. Like, they're killing people just to kill them. Like, they're not just, they're piling up this crazy number of bodies. But I will say, all I was going to say about Omar is, obviously Omar is great, and he's almost everybody's favorite character. When they did the Grantland brackets, whenever that was, he was their pick and also the president's pick, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to sit here and say Omar's not great. But I also think it's important that this show gave us Bunny on the other side, who's also one of my favorite characters in addition to Lester, and that his showcase in this episode was figuring out all the good he thought he was doing was bullshit and was not going to amount to anything in terms of this, you know, pilot project of the special class. And that the best that he could do is, you know, one-on-one with the one kid that he thought had a shot if Bunny took him under his wing.
Yeah.
So,
but at least the show flinched and gave us that. I mean, you know, I think he was very crestfallen to find that all the work he'd been doing all season long was essentially going to be relegated to academia, you know, forever. And not really ever put into practice.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, there was that gossamer thin silver lining of him, you know, being able to step up and take Naaman under his wing. And again, like, out of those four corner kids, Naaman is probably the one who, you know, probably needed the help the least in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his mother, you know, and it's all relative.
Right.
He's the one
we want to have it the least, certainly. Maybe I'm speaking for myself.
I mean, really, he spent a lot of the season being kind of a brat and, you know.
Well, and he's also the one, I forget who makes the point, like, he's going to be dead in 2 years tops. It may be Weebay who points this out.
Yeah.
Like, if we don't allow this to happen, he'll be dead.
I think it's actually Bunny to Weebe.
Oh yeah, it could be. Could be.
And he's making, that's in the scene that Tara was talking about where, you know, he's sort of making the point that it's like, these are not the streets. And I love that conversation because they're both sort of like, it's like, we both know when this happened or, you know, like, and you know, like they both can sort of connect just on that Baltimore level.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very smart of
Bunny. Division and gold.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. That's right. That's right. And God, that scene was just, I mean, they just acted the shit out of it.
Well,
and
you know, Bunny, I game mean, that recognized actor, game on either side of the moral well, yeah, divide, exactly. I guess.
That's the thing, is that it is the game, whether it's the police game or the corner game. I mean, they both know it. It really is this sort of dance kind of.
I also like the parting shot a lot too. That was cool. Just the neighborhood, you know, they just did a long.
And that's an interesting, like that. It's like, maybe he's not going to get out. Maybe he's not going to see that this is an opportunity for him to just become a Colvin and, you know, be straight and just have a sort of average suburban life.
It's pronounced Colvin.
Because there's that guy at the stop sign, like, what's up? And, I mean, I think Namon still wants to think of himself as hard. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think it was, cause I think he sort of looked at it. I forget what the kid's name is. The kid who's always boosting cars.
Yeah.
But that's who sort of pulls up and it's like, what's up? And I mean, he drives through a stop sign, almost crashes into a car.
Yep.
And I think Namon kind of looks at him with sort of like bemused, like, you know what? Maybe I won't miss that so much. Like maybe I can be cool here.
Too. Yeah.
As I recall in season 5, he ends up okay.
Yeah. I don't think we're necessarily meant to think he's doomed or anything. Just, you know, it's never that simple in Simon world.
Yeah. Yep.
So let's see if this episode is doomed or not in the canon. So I say,
nice
let's
segue,
put it.
Dave.
Thanks. You're not supposed to point him out, though. Tara, how vote you?
I vote yay.
And Sarah?
I vote yay.
Yeah. Obviously, 3-4-3. The Wire, season 4, episode 13, final grades. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot, great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. And who is our winner?
Our winner is Remington Steele, the fictional, or is he, Private Eye, because NBC is rebooting the series, and I think this is a good idea.
Maybe I watched more the crap so than out of the show Ironside. As a kid, and I could not tell you why.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's not a kid show.
Three channels, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, I would say Pierce Brosnan, but I don't think you're really the demo for that.
Not Stephanie Zimbalist either. Stephanie Blanzimbalist.
Yeah.
No. But, when we were talking about Sleepy Hollow a couple weeks ago, you were saying that it sounded to you like it was in line with Xena shows of ilk.
Yeah.
Remington Steele, even though it was a network show, is like basically a syndicated show.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if NBC can just relax and give it, you know, sort of the fun, disposable quality that USA dramas have, and I mean that very complimentary,
yeah, totally.
I think Remington Steele could be.
Did you read it's not actually a reboot? It's like sequel-ish.
Oh, really? No.
It's her daughter doing the same thing.
Oh, well, that's fine.
No. I mean,
that's a reboot.
I know, but it's sort of like a winky reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone is just dying for Stephanie Zimbalist to come back and reprise her role in the show. Pierce Brosnan might come back. He doesn't seem like he's too big for it.
Yeah, he might. Yeah. And our loser of the week?
Loser of the week is Damian Lewis for a bunch of reasons, but this week's is that he apparently had to read some stupid audiobook about Brody's whereabouts during the first, like, during the intervening time between last season's finale of Homeland.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And when he finally showed up again on, as we record this, last night's episode, looking like a ginger penis, please don't make him keep shaving his head. Shit ain't right. My theory is I think he's being punished... Everyone okay over there?
Ginger penis?
Uh-huh. Yeah, ginger penis. Yeah. Ginger penis. I think he's being punished for telling Esquire, whoever, or Rolling Stone, I guess, that Brody should have gotten killed off at the end of season 1.
Mm.
Theory until I discover that there's a print prequel, like a Homeland prequel book.
What?
About Carrie called, I don't even know, Suddenly Carrie or...
The Carrie Diaries, she's up, she's the down. Other ones. Yeah.
The Carrie Diaries, yeah, it's like a, it's so big, it's a cube, and it's all her crazy wall writings in one notebook. Anyway, yeah, no.
I was saying, I think John Ramos posted something about that on Twitter, you know, this audiobook that he did. And I was thinking, you know, because he was sent to Montreal or something at the end of season two. And I just imagine that the audiobook was him trying to figure out what the fuck poutine was. It was like 30 minutes of him just talking to the guy. So wait a second. It's cheese curds.
Or he's embedded in like front Quebecois or something like that.
All right, guys, I have a question for you, and it is this.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you knew what time it was.
Is it game time?
It's game time. French fries, gravy, cheese curds, all together. All right, this is the eighth game time of the season. But since Joe's not here, I thought we would make this non-regulation so we don't have to asterisk any future standings when somebody wins.
Fair.
And non-regulation is where I am a Viking.
But just to remind you, Joe is leading with 4. Tara has 3. Sarah is still looking to get on the board. And Dave could be our first guest point this week. We never know.
Not going to happen.
You don't know. We still don't know what the game is.
Yeah, exactly, Dave. Might be right in your wheelhouse. So for the prize for both today's game and for the
cancellation pool,
what it is you're going to get a certain number to determine later.
Yes.
Of non-penalty clues. Mm. Usually when you ask for a clue, you lose the opportunity for that point.
Right.
There's going to be some sort of system where you get the clue, but you can still get all the points. All right. So that's going to be the prize today and the prize for the cancellation pool. All right. This week we are playing Faking the Band.
Oh, ooh.
You hear that, Dave Bunting? Musician.
This may be near the wheelhouse.
This comes from Kieran Coleman, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot great mini of his choosing. This game will test your knowledge of fictional television music bands. I will play you a 10 to 15 second piece of audio.
God.
Name the band for 1 point and the show they are from for a second point. If you are stumped, I'll give you the name of the band and then you can try for the point for the show.
Got it.
These range from extremely easy to quite hard, so don't get cocky if you get an easy one off the bat. Now we will engage our person in control choosing initiative computer system, otherwise known as Picky 3000, to see who will start.
We will start with valued guest.
Valued guest. That means Dave, you will go first, followed by your New York City.
She doesn't.
Sarah, and then we'll go to Tara. So, are we ready to play Faking the Band?
Yes.
Dave, here More is or less. Your first band. I'm going to pause this for a sec. We're going to play the whole clip. And then you'll answer, okay?
Okay.
Think about a Brita was the hardest thing to do. But when someone's a bitch and a liar, there ain't nothing left to woo. I'm getting rid of Brita.
What am I doing?
I'm getting rid of the bee.
Dave, do you know the band and or the show?
The show is Community. I forget the name of the band. I know it's Vaughn's band, but I forget what they called themselves.
All right, you got 1 point. The band is Some Worries.
Some Worries. Yeah. All right.
All right, Sarah.
Hey, hi, hello.
So that's 1 point for Dave. Sarah, here
yes.
you go. Damon. Oh. Fighter of the Night, man. Oh. Champion of the Sun.
Yay.
Oh. You're a master of karate and friendship for everyone.
I have no idea on either panel.
Nothing? Not even the
Nothing.
Show? All right. Anybody else know on the panel?
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Correct.
But I can't remember the band.
The band is Electric Dream.
Oh.
Electric Dream, that's right.
Okay.
Tara.
Yes.
Xanotab kind of may cause dry mouth, hair loss, an overly alert feeling, and in some cases may diminish your sex drive.
Xanotab.
Well, it's Arrested Development.
1 point.
And the band is like this super long, the Tobias Funke family fun band.
Dr. Funke's 100% natural good time family band solution.
I'm so embarrassed that I didn't know that.
All right, so really we're back tough. To Dave for his second question.
You know I'm missing you. My mind is kissing you. Right behind you now, Charlene. Waiting, watching, oh so close.
Dave.
No clue.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I think Tara might know the show.
It's the Colbert Report.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the name of...
Stephen and the Colberts.
All right.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
All right. Sarah, here you go.
Yep.
There's a pretty big clue right at the start of that one, I'm going to say.
Okay. I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
That was Animal Muppets? At the start. And that was Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem from the Muppet Show.
Oh, you know who I actually thought it was? Didn't Captain Caveman have a band?
That's what it does. So sort of like they are similar, yes. Tara.
Yep.
The only cause of death was drifting off to sleep. And they left this piece of wisdom that we hope you all will keep. And they said...
I feel like I should know that, and I don't. Wait, can you give me the band?
Yes. Handful of Peter.
Family Guy? Hey!
Oh boy. Tara remembers.
Well, I forgot we could ask for the band.
Yeah. All right. Dave?
So why does this still feel like your interview?
What's the name of the band?
My Pretty Pony.
Yeah, no.
My Pretty Pony from Veronica Mars.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah, here you go.
Yep. Just out of reach. Could I have the band name, please?
Sarah.
Yes.
Question. Got an answer?
I asked you for the band name.
Oh, okay. Well, the music was still playing, so I couldn't hear. Queens of Dogtown.
Queens of Dogtown?
Yep.
I'm going to be mad.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Californication.
Oh, you won't be mad.
No, you won't be mad. Like I said, there's some easy ones and there's some hard ones. Tara.
Yes. Band?
Hep Alien.
Oh, fuck.
She is thinking. She is thinking hard, but cannot cut off of that.
Angel!
No, not Angel. Gilmore Girls. Gilmore
oh,
Girls.
Oh, fuck.
Time for a score break.
Hard.
It is really hard. Sarah is looking to get on the board. Dave has one. I have two.
All right.
It's a really low score break for score
wow.
break.
You hit a hard chunk.
Okay.
It's going to get a little bit easier.
All right.
So, Dave, here's yours.
The show's got to be Brady Bunch. The Brady Family Singers. I forget what they called themselves.
On the show, they were known as the Silver Platters. Off the show, I believe they're known as the Brady Bunch Band or something like that. But the Silver Platters is the fictional band name. All right. That's 1 point for Dave. And now we go to Sarah.
Sugar.
Can I have the band, please?
You sure can. The band is the Archies.
Well, I knew that. Damn it.
That might give you a clue as to the show name. Take a guess.
Archie and Jughead? I don't know.
You're on the right track. That was the Archie Comedy Hour.
Oh.
With the Archies. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Tara.
Yep.
Apples. You taste good. Trees. You give us wood. Grandma.
I am gay.
Bridge.
Show me on in a sexual way.
Spaghetti.
You're my favorite food.
A dog in sunglasses.
You're a real cool dude.
30 Rock is the show. I can't remember what the band was called.
The Woggles.
Okay.
The Woggles.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. All right. Here you go, Dave.
Drive Shaft, Lost.
Nice. That's our first two-pointer of this game.
Good
well done.
Job.
Can't believe I remember Drive Shaft. Holy crap.
Me neither. Get out.
Here you go, Sarah.
Yep. Bye, bye, little Sebastian. Miss you in the satisfaction.
Dave's playing air guitar, but I, alas, do not know. May I have the band name, please?
Mouse Rat.
Mouse Rat?
Mouse Rat.
Doesn't help. Don't know.
Sarah only watched her very first episode of Parks and Recreation on Thursday.
Yeah.
See? And they weren't on that.
Oh my God, that episode is so hilarious, too.
It is so good.
Here you go, Tara.
Yep.
For all the latest medical poop, call Surgeon General, see Everett Coop. Coop, coop, a
The B Sharps?
Yes.
From The Simpsons.
2 points. All right, back to back to Dave.
Oh God. Is it the frozen embryos on My So-Called Life?
It is not.
Good guess, though.
It was Dingoes Ate My Baby from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Whatever.
Knew that one, too. God damn it.
Really?
All right, picky. Yep.
Oh, impressive. Okay, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
This is for Sarah. Here you go.
Band name?
Jesse and the Rippers.
Ah.
Jesse and the Rippers?
That's correct.
Full House?
Nice.
Oh, that's the first point.
The Rippers.
God, the shit.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Tara.
Stables. Yep.
That was, sorry, no closed captioning for you on that one.
All right, band name?
Crucifictorious.
Oh.
Oh.
Friday Night Lights.
Correct.
Todd.
Score break, please, Star.
Sarah has one.
Yes.
Ooh. Dave has four. Yeah. I have six.
Bye. All right. Still a little bit of game left here. All right, so now we're on to, who is last? So this is Taurus?
No, this is Dave.
This is Dave. Okay, here you go, Dave.
I need to show you a secret. It's gonna be a surprise. Come a little bit closer. Let me whisper in your eyes. Whisper in your eyes.
That sounds hilarious, but I have no idea what it is.
Do you want the band?
Sure.
Boys for the number now. Boys with a Z for now.
Amazing.
Conan?
Oh, good guess.
That's a good guess. It was from Bob's Burgers. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm just
written,
getting caught up.
Co-written by site contributor Wendy Molyneux.
True.
Aww. That episode.
Sarah.
Sarah.
Yes.
You know it. And it's up to you to save me.
I have no idea what the band name is, but I'm pretty sure that's South Park.
Correct. For 1 point, the band name is Faith Plus One.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
All right. Tara.
Yes.
Man, I cannot remember the order for the life of me. Tara.
Yes.
Here is your fictional band from television.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Cylon and Garfunkel from Futurama.
That's correct. Awesome. Two points.
So good.
All right, Dave, good luck on this one. You're not getting any points.
Great.
Rumors spread around that Texas town. Bubba Jack out of range. You know what I'm talking about.
This is probably the hardest one, I think, on the docket. No.
I'll take the band name just in case.
ZZ Scott.
That's awesome.
No, I don't know.
It's from the late and lamented Ben and Kate.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh.
All right. Sarah.
Yes.
Back it up into my face and be with me forever. Back it up into my face in any kind of weather.
Band name, please.
Sound LLC.
Sound LLC.
Oy.
I'm going to be annoyed, I think.
I don't know, but that's a great band name.
Anybody recognize the voice?
No.
Did it sound familiar?
No.
It was Maya Rudolph.
Oh.
Okay. From Up All Night.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
oh.
Up All Night.
All right.
All right. So off to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a few simple steps to help with that. Step one.
Call the step.
Step two, we'll get in a car.
Step three,
yo, let the car and drive.
Step four,
believe in yourself.
Step five,
repeat step four.
It's from Happy Endings, but I can't remember what their bar mitzvah band was called.
Boys to Menorah.
Oh, of course.
All right, that is great.
Dave, here you go.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. Train going anywhere.
Too soon.
Don't give him hints.
The band is called The Glee Club. I'm assuming it's from Glee.
Correct for 1 point. And the New Directions.
Just whatever, New Directions.
Dude. Sorry, New Directions.
Worst.
There. Sarah.
May he rest in peace.
1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, Maggie, that's how you're all right.
So we have laughter. We have a laugh track or an audience or something in that one. Might give you a clue. Reminding you, you can ask for the band name for it.
That's what I was doing. Uh-huh. Band name, please.
Ian Rubbish and the Bizarros.
Oh, God. The Ruddles. I don't know.
Good guess.
Saturday Night Live. Recently on Saturday Night Live, I believe.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's see. So this is for Tara, right?
Mm-hmm.
Legal,
accounting,
shipping and receiving,
online property management, including pest control, nighttime security, and non-arboreal gardening services.
Well, that's from Scrubs, but they kept changing their band names. I don't know. I don't know any of them.
Well, then it doesn't matter then.
No, it doesn't.
The Worthless Peons.
Of course.
The Worthless Peons.
Sure.
Oh, no, they didn't keep changing their names. They kept changing their focus of their songs. Yep. Yes.
Dave? Here you go.
Shame, shame, shame on you, Nadavia. Shame, shame, shame on you, Nadavia. Shame, shame, shame what you have done.
I don't know.
Want the band?
Sure.
Davis for Council. I'm going to say between that and the music, you might be able to piece this one together.
I really can't.
All right. Any guesses? It's the show that's homework. It's Tremé.
Oh.
Yes. I should have asked for...
You were close when you said The Wire.
I should have asked for a score break in the last question.
But I was really kind of hoping that was going to be the Arnold Diaz theme from Shame on You.
Yeah.
Our relative by marriage, Arnold Diaz.
Sarah has 2, Dave has 5, I have 10.
All right. Sarah,
yes.
Your next theme is coming
praise
up.
The Partridge Family, praise.
We're the Partridge Family. Which one's that?
Wow. Band name?
Mm-hmm. Okay, this should help you. The band is Zack Attack.
Zack Attack. Oh.
Zack Attack.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yep. When the wind comes down, when they nuke the town, when dead clowns can't clown, we'll still be freaking friends. Freaking friends. Freaking friends. Till we come to bed, it's we're freaking friends. Band name, please?
Mystic, with that's S-T-I-K.
Yep.
Spiral. Mystic Spiral.
No.
No? If Joe was here, he might get it.
Daria?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dave, here's your last theme. I mean, your last band.
Oh my God, I've heard that. Oh God. Oh. All right, give me the band name.
Karma Rocket.
Oh, damn it. I don't know.
Anybody? That's from Party Down. That was...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the blonde guy's band. All right, Sarah, here's your last one.
Creep out in the dark of night. Cat claws are the way we walk. Meow is the way we talk. Whisker Patrol. Whisker Patrol.
That's right up your alley. You love cats.
I do. I need a band name, though.
Catnap.
Oh. Damn it. As tempting as it is to guess Josie and the Pussycats, I'm going to say 30 Rock instead.
Anybody? Mm-hmm. Don't remember that?
No.
It's the cat band from Portlandia.
Oh, sure.
Where the cat starts scratching
and then they enter.
Yeah, all right. Tara, your last and the last. Here we go.
It's Titanica from Mr. Show.
Correct. All right. So let's get a final score.
Sarah had 3. Dave had 5. I have 12.
Okay. So I guess Tara won. And you want to do the tiebreaker for some shits and some giggles?
Sure.
All right. Whoever gets it first, who knows what's going to happen, whoever gets it first.
Please be the monkeys. Please be the monkeys.
Scrantonicity, The Office.
Yes, that's right.
Nice.
All right. Okay, for answering that, Dave, I'm going to give you one future clue point.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, future clue.
Yep, future clue. And for Tara, for winning this one, you get 2 clues. In the future to use.
Okay.
And the winner of the cancellation pool will get 4.
Whoa.
All right.
Ooh.
So that's how it's going to shake out.
Hang in there, back in the game.
All right. So congratulations, Tara.
Tara. Tara.
All right, guys, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gathered around the cauldron to discuss American Horror Story, Coven, and checked in for an update on the fall show Deadpool. We asked if the Mindy Project theme was worse than jazz, and Dave successfully pitched us Wire's season 4 finale for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's bracket non-regulation game time called Faking the Band from Kieran. Kieran earns himself and extra credit for his troubles. And that was a lot of work, so thank you very much. He even clipped all the songs.
Whoa, yeah. Impressive.
Wow. Yeah,
absolutely. Speaking of bands, if you're want to make your fictional band a reality, you're in the Brooklyn area, Dave, where should they go?
Probably to King Killer Studios.
King Killer Studios. What's the domain on that?
That would be www.kingkillerstudios.com.
All right. If you'd like to submit something to the podcast, look in the info section at the top of Previously TV. We are on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, and we're in your underwear drawer when you're not looking. We're everywhere. So, you know, let us know what you think. And if you've got any questions, let us know. And guys, remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Careful or I'll drop a house on you too.
Dave Bunting.
Bye.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
That was a little pitchy, dog.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot. Great.
How much?
20 on the dollar.
10, nigga.
Don't make me say 25 now.
That's 400,000.
How about we take your faggot ass in the back room and get into some diabolical brutality? Find our shit the old-fashioned way. Feel me?
Oh, I feel you. Sound like a plan. I don't know, though, Joe. You think Omar gonna give it up?
20 on the dollar it is.